Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Madison, what are you reading today?
I am almost finished with Hunting Adeline, and this is my reread. So I'm almost done with the Cat and Mouse world. After this, I have Where's Molly, and then I'll be done.
Do you like the story better now that you're rereading it?
I liked it the first time. Okay, let me get on my little soapbox. So people, whenever they think of Hunting and Haunting, or mostly Haunting Adeline, there are two and a half scenes, I feel like, that people think of. Mm-hmm. But this story does have a plot. And it's a great plot, because H.D. Carlton, love her, like all of her stories, all of her dark romances has like some sort of mystery that you're trying to crack the code to. And yes, this is very spicy, but like there's more than just that. Like I was even talking with my friend and I was like, I know this is going to sound weird, because she was like recommending all these books I should read. But I'm like, I think I need something that like actually has a little bit of plot to it. So then I started my reread and she like looked at me weird. I'm like, I know that's very out of character for me, but like I need a plot right now. And so, yes, Haunting and Hunting. Ooh, and Phantom. If you haven't read Phantom yet, chef's kiss. That's like kind of a good little nudge into that world, because Ronaldo, compared to Zayd, very golden retriever. He's not, but like Ronaldo versus Zayd, he's more not so scary.
That's fair. That was a soapbox. I'm glad you got that off your chest.
Yeah, well, let me get off my soapbox.
She's like, let me tell you something.
Let me tell you something.
Oh, man.
So what's your reading?
I am almost done with the third book of Zodiac Academy.
Wow.
I know. I told Jamie when we talked to her in our previous episode that I would commit to the series, and I'm doing it in the reading order that she requested. I have her checklist. So I am nervous, though, because
you sound like me.
You hear my voice crack. Sorry, I just was like 103 right there. I am nervous because I have never started a series, had to pause that series and then go to a different series with a different set of characters, right? Because we're supposed to do books 1, 2, and 3, pause, go over to the Ruthless Boys for 5 books, and then come back and do book 4.
But they're still kind of interconnected from what I get. I feel like the reading order that she suggested, I feel like is almost like for those who did like the first couple of Thorn and Glass books and then did Assassin's Blade and then finished. Maybe because like you get all of these new characters and you're just like, oh, but then they eventually like there's a reason.
Right,
I think it's kind of the same way of like you're gonna read the Ruthless Boys and there's a reason for that, because I think she even said that one of them is like within the first beginning books, but they don't use his specific name,
or like, yeah, and there's like a different spoiler name,
but like he's there.
Yeah, and there's like a there, if you didn't read those first, I think if you read book 4, then there would be like a kind of a spoiler, like a small one, but she was like, I wish I would have read that spoiler.
Yeah.
So, and then her reading order is for like maximum emotional damage.
I like that order,
which my therapist says isn't a good idea, but I'm gonna do it anyways.
Yes.
Like, maybe you should do things for maximum emotional damage.
I was like,
I'm gonna do it anyways.
No, thank you.
That's some good advice. I won't be taking it. Love you anyways. So yeah, I am on that. And then I'm starting our some of our arcs that we have been receiving and diving into those. So that's very exciting.
I know, I'm excited to start some of the arcs, but I need to finish the Cat and Mouse first, and then I need to do Quicksilver because I promised you.
Yes, that is top tier priority. Brimstone comes out November 18th.
I will meet Kingfisher, I promise.
Yes.
I see him everywhere.
My army, it's growing. My Quicksilver army. For those who love Quicksilver and are excited for Brimstone to come out, you may or may not be going to the midnight release party in New York. If you are going to that, you will see me. You will see me there. The Goodish Girls will be representing. I may or may not have some Goodish Girls merch on my person. So if you see me, stop by and say hi. And I will give you free stuff. Everyone likes free stuff. We love free stuff. Everyone likes it. So yes, we'll be there the night of the 17th. It's at midnight release party, Barnes & Noble. So I hope to see you guys there too. Introduce yourself. We'll take some pictures. It'll be fun. hold for like 2 seconds. Sorry. I took a hair on my camera and I didn't like it. Okay. Let's do this. Let's get into it. Welcome to your guided tour of Crescent City. My name is Dallas.
I'm Madison.
And this is the Goodish Girls. We are doing this as we do every other week that we have done this series for Crescent City. We're doing a guided tour that is spoiler free, but we will tell you highlights and key moments and characters that you need to remember. Once we are done with all of that stuff, if you would like to stay for the House of Theories and Lore, you are more than welcome to. But be warned, there are a ton of spoilers in there for things all across the Massverse. So we just talk basically the entire Sarah J. Maas series because we do know that they are all interconnected and cross over. So let's get into it. This week we are covering chapters 51 through 56. We are starting at chapters 51. I do want to reference the previous episode with just one quote though that we did, and it's what I said. They needed, like, the group needed more help on this. They needed an outside perspective on the whole situation that was going on. Right. But in the end of that chapter, in chapter 50, they did not know who this outside perspective was. So Bryce is going to show us who this outside perspective is. And Hunt is like real going to be real mad about it.
When is Hunt not mad?
When is Hunt not mad? Because he's an old man. He is. He's just an old man, set in his ways.
He is young. We find out how old he is in these few chapters. He's just a baby. He's
but just in a baby here boy. Though, in his heart, he is 975.
Compared to that, I'm an old lady. Then physically, I'm young. Also I am an old lady.
I am also old lady. Yes, in here it doesn't actually say how old he is in his soul, but he gives us his real age, but not his soul age. But I can tell that it's 8 million years old. He's like, I mean, the prime apparent.
Has lived through centuries.
He sure has. So who was this outside perspective, we are asking? We are summoning a demon this week, but not any demon, the Prince of Hell himself. So Hunt, again, had legit no idea this was happening, right? And that Bryce was planning this, and bro was shook. He was like, what is actually happening right now? So we are reminded of the obsidian salt that Bryce bought from the meat market many chapters ago that we really, she like stuck it in a drawer. We haven't talked about it since. So she's bringing that out now. And it's mentioned that she most likely put it into her food processor to make it into the powder form that it is now. So she's very modern, very high tech. And the powder is now laying in a circle around Bryce and Hunt. Bryce is not going to waste time trying to figure out what kind of demon killed Danica. And Hunt notes during this whole time when she's like getting the circle ready, he goes, just so you remember, like, it is illegal to summon a demon inside a residential zone. And I immediately was like, okay, head of the HOA, are you going to bust out the CC&Rs in this subdivision?
You're very much on Bryce's side. And I'm like, don't talk to my baby that way. He knows what he's talking about.
No, and he's not wrong. It is against the law. And because she's like, okay, narc. Like, but it just it immediately made me think of like those like HOA people that are like, bop, bop, bop. I'm with the head of the HOA. Like, your grass is too long.
I don't think Hunt would be that strict or that.
No, but you could see him thinking about it. He wanted to.
Leave my poor baby alone.
He was like, let me bust out these this book of contracts.
Listen, he's no Dane Atos, okay?
Oh, Dane is the president of all HOAs. He runs the Dane management company.
Dane invented the HOA.
He did. He was like, actually, we need HOAs. We oh, need governments Lord. In subdivisions. I have lived in an HOA. I want to clarify that. Like, I have done my time. So I do have experience. And they're fine. I don't love them. I don't live in one now, but I just want to be like, someone's going to be like, have you ever lived in an HOA? Yes. Yes, I have. So as Hunt is trying to figure out the logistics of this wild plan that Bryce has created, he notes that each demon has a number assigned to it, like an ancient email address, he says. But Bryce is like, I don't need its number. Like, I know who I'm calling. And all of a sudden, the temperature in the room started dropping, like drastically. And we know the Prince of Hell shows up to greet them. His name is Adis. Adis is the Prince of the Chasm in the fifth level of Hell, and he's super handsome and blonde. Hunt, like, notes, like, how handsome he is. He's like, oh, I expected something kind of scary and weird looking, but no, you're actually, like, really cute. So Adis knew... Yeah, exactly. He's like, wow, he's like, looks kind of nice. So Adis knew exactly who Bryce was and greeted her like he was talking to an old friend. And this is where we get a good piece of information that seems complicated at the moment, but we also need to keep this in our pocket, right? Like, keep this one in the back of your mind. So Adis yielded to only two others in Hell. The Prince of the Abyss was the first one, and the Prince of the Pit. So this is the Prince of the Pit, the seventh and mightiest. This is the Star Eater himself, which has been mentioned in previous chapters. And his name was never mentioned on this side of the Northern Rift because he is the only being known to have killed an Asteri, right? So the Asteri that was killed was Sirius, who was also called the Wolf Star. And this Asteri was killed during the First War. And it says, like, there was things that he did to Sirius after killing her, but it's never meant, like, it's there's no details. So it's all a big mystery, and it kind of leaves it up to the imagination of, like, what did he do to this Asteri afterwards? Bryce mentions that Adis appeared as a cat last time, and when he saw her last time when she was younger, and Hunt is literally having an aneurysm at this point in time. He's in this circle. Baby. He's got the salt around him. The Prince of Hell shows up, and she's like, you were a cat last time. And he's like, what do you mean last time? What is happening? Like, nothing surprises the Umber Mortis except for when Bryce does literally anything. It's awesome. And then Bryce bows to the prince. Adis mentions Bryce was really young when they met. She was 13, and Adis says that she was very sad back then as well. They only have a little bit of time left in this conversation because it is getting so cold, and Bryce can still get, like, hypothermia because she hasn't made the drop. So they have to be very quick on what they're going to be asking because they don't have a ton of time. So she mentions that the princes are getting bored, like, down in Hell where they are, and he has no clue what she's talking about. Bryce gets right to it, though, and asks who is summoning the Crystallos and what killed Danica. Adis is not privy to the movements of every being in Hell, as, like, he claims, but she pushes on to see if she can get more information from him. So she's like, you guys are doing something down there. And he's like, contrary to your personal beliefs, I actually don't know everything that's happening down there. Like, there's actually quite a few layers. But she actually doesn't believe
mind
him.
Your business.
Yeah, right? He's like, I don't know what's happening. So he mentions that she is not crying this time. But he gave her advice last time, like the last time he saw her when she was younger, not to let anyone see her cry. So Adis finally notices Hunt and says, who are you? And he also says, a fallen warrior with the power of... dot, 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 dot. Then he makes a face, like, of what I would take as, like, surprise or question, maybe recognition, I don't know. And he says, what are you doing with a black crown around your brow? And Hunt had never heard it be called that before. So he was like, that's weird, like a black crown.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really interesting. So Aedas claims that his princes are in darkness and they are not stirring. But Hunt states that they have been stirring for a long time at the Northern Rift. Aedas rebuttals with the fact that the Northern Rift doesn't just open to hell, but many realms, and asks if they ever considered that it might not be the demons of hell entering Midgard. What is hell but a distant planet? And that is wild, mm-hmm. honestly. And we don't get like a ton of more of information on this, like in this chapter. But I think that that is a huge Easter egg, honestly. What is hell but a distant planet? That's nuts.
Yeah, so, I wouldn't even... It's like a hint to an Easter egg-ish, but I wouldn't say like it's a... What's the word? Like a approved fact. Like it's still like mm-hmm. assumption-based.
I feel like it's a lot of foreshadowing, like...
Foreshadowing for sure, but it's not like mm-hmm. something for like I'm just gonna be quiet because I don't want to give too much away. But it's not like it's not like, oh, like you're gonna get an exact answer to what it means, but it's like it does allude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would agree with that. Like you don't get any for sure details right now. But we get more later.
Mm-hmm.
We get a little bit more later. But something to remember, right? So the princes of levels 1 through 4 mess with the rift on occasion, but the powerful princes do not care about that rift at all. Like, they have more things to worry about. However, he says that none of them are sending the Crystallos, which is interesting information as well. Hunt mentions that the princes of hell once wanted to live on the planet of Midgard and asks why that would be any different now. So, like, why would you be honest about sending the Crystallos if you guys are planning to, like, take over and live here? However, Aedas claims that the Asteri are spinning rumors and wonders what else they have been saying. So he's saying, like, basically, we've never wanted to live on this planet. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, like, what else the Asteri are gossip-girling about, stirring the cauldron, I guess. As you can say. And then Aedas asks, what blinds an oracle? And Bryce is like, what the fuck? So... she says, what sort of cat visits an oracle? He doesn't answer. Like, total deflection. And then proceeds to flirt with her. Which, like, okay. I guess that's a good deflection. True. But I was like, I guess you don't have to answer. That's fine. So Hunt tells him not to come back, but Bryce begs him to give her answers. Hunt's like, we're done here. And she's like, no, we're actually not done. I have more things to ask. And Aedas gives a very interesting piece of advice. He says, run the tests again and find what is in the in-between. Before he started to fade away, she thanks him for that day back when she was like 13 years old. He tells her, make the drop, Bryce, and find him when he's done. When she's done. So he's like, run the test again, make the drop, find him. And then he says something that, like, the first time I heard this, I got chills. He was like, the mm-hmm. oracle did not see, but I did. Bum, bum, bum. That's wild. We find out that when things went bad after Bryce's oracle visit and she was crying outside on a bench, that she met a cat and it spoke to her. She knew it was something different. Like, it wasn't just a regular shifter. Jessica told her, like back in the day, that princes can slip through the rift into the shape of other animals, but none of them have their powers during the time that they are there, and they can only stay for a few hours. So he asked her, what blinds an oracle? And she says, what sort of cat visits an oracle, right? He then advised her to stop crying and not give the people the gift of her sorrow. He never told Bryce why he was at the Oracle and walked her home before disappearing once again, like before she even had the chance to thank him. So once the room starts, like the temperature is raised, Aedas is gone, Bryce calls Declan Emmett, which is one of Rune's buddies, and asks him to run the tests again. And that include the ones on everything a few years ago from the pack, like all the evidence, right? Deck mentions to run a scent diagnostic, but the clothes from the pack would be needed. So even though the 33rd probably ran a scent test, they did not run a Mimir test. They only ran a regular test. So Deck would run that Mimir test for her. It's considered Fae tech. they loan it out to agencies for major cases. And he mentions that, like, someone should have said something about it. So Roone took the phone from Deck immediately. So a direct order was given by the Autumn King not to share this test and that the Fae should stay out of it. The Autumn King is a real prick, and Bryce is literally running out of the apartment currently to tell him just that. So she is a booming. She's on her way.
I can't with this kid. I also feel so bad for Roone. He always has to be the freaking bearer of bad news for the Autumn King.
And the Autumn King literally gives no fucks.
No. It's fine. Everything's
fine. I hate it. Father of the year.
But anywho, whenever we do pick up with chapter 52, Bryce is running to the Autumn King's court, and we actually finally get a description of what it looks like, which I have beef with this too, because for an Autumn King, it's very spring court coded, because she says that she hurtled past the marble behemoth that was the Fae Archives. The building was covered in drooping veils of flowers that ran down its many columns. Roses, jasmine, wisteria, all in perpetual bloom, no matter the season. But yeah, so the fact, I mean, that's just the Fae Archives, but like, that flowers don't give me autumn vibes unless it's specifically sunflowers, you know?
Yeah.
But you know what can make it feel like more autumny?
What?
It's if you had a good autumn scented candle.
Oh, look at that candle. That's so cute.
It is so cute, and she smells so good. So we got these candles from Starlight Candle Co. And she smells exactly like pumpkin pie. So I will be lighting her this fall. The Autumn King, you need one of these, because right now you're giving off spring court vibes. You're giving Tamlin. You should be giving Baron at best.
You're giving Tamlin. Switch it up. Yeah, let's give the Autumn King a discount code so he can get a nice fall candle to match his name.
Listen, if you need a candle, we got you. If you go to Starlight Candle Co. and if you pick out a candle for yourself, whether it is this cute little pumpkin pie candle, or there's also an Olympian collection where you can get an Olympian. Right here we have Persephone. She also is kind of fallish a little bit. She has a little bit of apple cider with her. And I love whenever candles have things in the wax. And so she has not only flowers, but I don't know if you can see, because as we know, if you don't know, Persephone is the also like queen of the underworld because she marries Hades. But there's also little skulls in here too.
Oh.
For the nod for the underworld.
That's so cute.
I'm very obsessed with this because I have been listening to the musical Hades Town, which is like, it's about Orpheus and Eurydice, but like there's also a nod to Hades and Persephone because they very much influence the musical as well. But if you like your own Olympian candle or a nice fall candle, you can use the code GoodishGirls15 at checkout for 15% off.
Yes, and again, GoodishGirls15.
Yeah, and that is at Starlight Candle Co. Go check them out. Tell them the Goodish Girls sent you.
Yeah, thank you, Starlight Candle Co. Those are so cute. Which one are you keeping?
Keeping the little pumpkin.
It's very your vibe.
It is very my
That's
vibe.
That's very cute.
And I need more fall decor.
Yes. Agreed. You can never have too much.
Aren't yeah, you? I feel you know like... what? We're going to fall up this pod.
Oh, that's perfect.
Boom, we're in fall.
That's cute. It's fall officially. Madison has a candle. It's perfect. Yeah. Thank you, Starlight Candle Co. Those are so cute. Madison has them. I have not smelled them yet, so I am excited to see what Persephone's candle smells like. I very – like, Persephone and Hades, like, their story retelling is very interesting to me. If you've read The Blood of Hercules, you know. If you have not, then read it.
So I will.
I know you did buy it. I'm so excited. If you are in Jasmine Mass's like newsletter subscription, chapter 2 was just sent to our emails. So I am so excited to read it. I have never wanted an arc so bad in my life.
Really?
Yes.
No, I need book four.
I need
this arc whenever she writes it.
It comes out October 27th, and I cannot wait. I'm ready. I'm like, can you guys just send it to me now? So I just have it. Like, I just need it in my hands.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I just need to hold it. So, yeah. Thank you again, Starlight Candle Company. That's very exciting. I love a good candle. Well, so now the Autumn King has a candle.
And the Autumn King, get on it.
That's for you. Yeah. So for our listeners, Goodish Girls 15. And then that link will be in our show notes too. So you don't have to remember that if you're driving or like doing something right now. So in our show notes, her link will be there to her website. And then Goodish Girls 15 will be the checkout code.
Yes. So now that we have like a little bit more of an autumn vibe, Bryce is going to the palace. She is demanding an audience with the Autumn King. However, there are two guards there, and one guard is telling her, like, it was reminding me of the scene in The Wizard of Oz, like that one annoying guard that he's like, can't you read? And it's like, don't knock, ring the doorbell. Mm-hmm. I hate this guard. He's not relevant. I just didn't like him.
Fair.
But he was like, do you have an appointment? And she's like, no.
Do not.
And then Hunt comes in and the guard starts calling Bryce names. And Hunt's like, no, thank you. And so his power starts to build. And then as like things are like kind of starting to progress, Rune runs up and he was like telling the guards to stand down. But the audacity of this guard. He tells Rune, the prince of the Valbarn Fae, that even he doesn't have the authorization to do that.
Which is insane. Which
like,
tells you
what?
How much the Autumn King undermines Rune.
Petition to rehome Rune and Hunt.
Petition to rehome. Rune is up for adoption. If any nice families would like to adopt him.
I'm adding him to the bubble.
Put him in the bubble. Poor guy. That is really sad.
But anywho, they're like fighting with this guard. Bryce is like telling the guard, and she's saying like, well, if he's not gonna meet with me, like tell him that Bryce Quinlan wants to meet with him. But they eventually like, she's like, I need to get out of here. I'm worked up. So she still is running, but she runs now to her favorite whiskey bar. Where she breaks her no drinking rule. And Rune stays at the palace. However, Hunt does run to find her. And as she's knocking back whiskeys, he just sets a little purple tonic by her. And he says, this is for your leg, which did start hurting her because she's been doing all this running and all these really uncomfortable shoes. And justice for Hunt. Because she bites his head off so much during this scene as he's like trying to, he's got her a tonic. He even said, because she was getting on to him saying like, oh, are you going to get on to me about my new drinking rule? He's like, well, only you can break that rule. That's not my rule. So like, you do whatever you want. And he offers to stay with her. And he's like, if you want to get drunk, I'll stay. And I'll like be like your bodyguard and whatnot. Make sure like you get to and from the bar safely. And she... Bryce, you push my buttons sometimes, girly pop, and this is one of them. Because she says, just this, I did not like this line. She said, aren't you going to tell me what your old girlfriend would think about you manhandling me?
Ouch.
You're a problem. You're a real problem.
You're a problem. Medicine is 99 problems, but with Bryce, it's 100.
Yeah, I got 99 problems, and Bryce is one. It's fine. Hunt is like, you know what, have fun at the bar, I'm leaving. And as he should, because my sweet baby boy, he doesn't need this. So he goes back to the apartment, but he does have like a little realization that since everything on Shahar, with everything that happened in previous chapters with Bryce and him on the roof, also his little alone time in the shower. Didn't think of Shahar at all. His main focus was Quinlan. And he's like, mm-hmm. I know that she knows that I know. Like, that's what I'm thinking about. So, like, the fact that she said all those things about Shahar, he's like, but can't you see? It's you, not Shahar. Yeah. But he's relaxing in the apartment, watching some sunball, as he should. And Bryce finally does come back. She comes back with groceries. And Hunt's like, we got company. And she's like, no. But she's eventually making him an apology meal. And as she's cooking, they kind of have some banter back and forth. Mm-hmm. Where we do finally find out a little bit more about the story that is referenced throughout the book. Mm-hmm. So Bryce is telling the story of how Danica found a smuggling ring for it started off as a senior thesis for illegal animal trade. No one was listening to Danica about it. And so Danica actually uncovered a real smuggling ring. And whenever no one in the 33rd or the Ox would help her, she decided that her and Bryce were going to do something about it. Yay. I'm just like,
what does that yay mean?
I'm just like, maybe going with more reinforcements, because I'm just like, yeah, no one would help you, but like, maybe consider asking the pack of devils and not just the two of you, because as they're releasing animals, they do get caught. Mm-hmm. They do get caught, and you look like you have words.
I do. Say I do words. Have words. I don't disagree with you necessarily. Like, more hands make less work, right? Like, I get mm-hmm. it. You probably, in hindsight, could have asked for help, but like, if you've ever had that friendship, like with your, like we've talked about this, like Bryce and Danica were essentially soulmates, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you are with that person, there is, in your mind, there is nothing that you guys can't do together. There's nothing you can't take on with just you two, right? Like you just feel that so intensely that they're like, we don't need anybody else. Like it can be just us. And yeah, it was a struggle, but like, would their connection have strengthened as much as it did if the whole pack would have been there?
I mean, I still think, well, I mean, first of all, if the pack was there and if they could have done things quicker, maybe they wouldn't have gotten caught.
Maybe.
But I think it still would have been fine, because I feel like that they would have been like the two leaders of the project, and then the pack would be like their backup.
Would they? Or would Connor have stepped in and been Danica's second?
Connor.
Right? As he was, right? And would they have let Bryce handle her own? Or would they have gone alpha hole and been like, no, Bryce, get back on the bike. Get behind me. I don't think
Connor was ever an alpha hole.
Like the pack in general, right? Like I think that in a dangerous situation, I think that they would have attempted to push Bryce to the side, who has not made the drop, who is half fey, half human, who they care a lot about, right? Not that I'm saying it's an alpha hole, but Bryce would have for sure seen it that way, right? Which is why she gets so mad at Hunt, right? Hunt's like, I brought you tonic. And she's like, I literally told you to leave it alone. I am a grown woman. I told you not to help me. Don't help me. Don't undermine. I know. I know you hate me for this. Just
don't I know. Talk to him. Look away.
But that's what she's meaning by this, right? Like she set a boundary of, I don't want your help with my leg. Like it's fine. And he is choosing to ignore it. So she is setting a boundary as an adult and as a person. And he is crossing that, which is why she's so angry. I'm not saying how she treats him is a good thing. I don't agree. Like I agree with you on that. But mm-hmm. I also see why she's like, bro, stop. Same for her mom, right? Like, same, like later on we talk about, like in this episode, we'll talk about like Ember and like those boundaries as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I just wonder. Yes, would it have been a good choice to bring the pack with them? Sure. Did they make a better memory, get closer and strengthen their bond because it was just the two of them and they made it through that? That's what I feel like. My opinion. Those are my words.
Those are good words.
Maybe hot take.
I wouldn't say it was a hot take. I don't know. We'll never know.
That's true. R.I.P.
It was just the two of them.
Yeah. But
as they were releasing animals, they did in fact get caught, and that leads to a motorcycle chase and then a crash. And so as they crash, she's tells them how, or Bryce tells Hunt how they were taken to the hospital for treating their injuries, and how Danica got shot twice and broke her pelvis, and I believe Bryce broke her leg. Danica got shot twice in the leg, and Bryce broke her arm in three places. And Hunt said that, or Hunt asked if she killed them or if anyone killed them. And all Bryce said was some of the ones, or she said some, the ones who shot Danica, I took care of them. The police got the rest. And then she goes into like saying how people always thought of Danica as a party princess, but even though Danica was sometimes a very difficult person, she was also mm-hmm. a very good person at heart. Mm-hmm. So as they're talking about Danica, Bryce mentions to Hunt how sometimes it is hard to move on some days, and how it feels like the light has essentially been taken from her. And he says that he knows some angels who have also kind of felt the same way and have actually accepted the tattoos that they have on their wrists and on their foreheads, the halos. Mm-hmm. And Bryce asks Hunt why he hasn't accepted those tattoos, and if he could redo everything again with the whole thing that happened with Shahar and the Fallen, would he still follow Shahar? And mm-hmm. he ultimately said that he would, because of his powers. He knows that no matter what, he would have found himself in some sort of service, mm-hmm. Whether it was like necessarily labeled slavery as he's in right now. But he knows that because of his power, someone would have found out and someone still would have taken advantage of that. And Bryce, I do like this quote, and also is a good quote to remember, but she says, I know what it's like to be good at something you don't want to be good at. That talent you'd let go in a heartbeat. And so they kind of bond over that. One thing that he mentions, and I really like this little quote, so I'm going to read it. But he says that, again, they're talking about like, would you do anything differently? And he mm-hmm. goes into that he would be serving no matter what. He says, the only difference is that I'm serving in Valbara in a fool's bargain with an archangel, hoping one day to be forgiven for my supposed sins. And then Bryce says, you don't think they were sins? And he says, no, I think the angel hierarchies are crap, and you were right, and we were right to rebel. And she asks, even if it cost you everything? And he said, yes. And that eventually, in a perfect world, if he could get free, and if he does ever get free, he remembers the face of everyone who was ever against him in the Fallen, all the archangels, all the Senate, the Asteri, the governors, and he is essentially wanting to get rid of them all. So Bryce asks, after you've killed them all, then what? And he says, assuming I live through it, you mean? And she says, assuming you live through taking down the archangels and the Asteri, what then? And then he says, I don't know. Maybe you and I can figure it out, Quinlan. We'll have centuries to do it. And if you read Throne of Glass, that one hit a little too hard for me, because mm-hmm. it reminded me of my Shayla.
My Shayla. Madison's romantic little heart.
Listen. Loving hurts. Mm-hmm. But after that cutesy little moment, and I was also triggered by Throne of Glass, Bryce also says, like, well, after all this happens, like, not necessarily, like, after he takes care of everyone, but, like, after the case, mm-hmm. If we solve it and if we live through it, because there's going to be consequences if we don't. Because Hunt at the whiskey bar said, I'll see you at home, referencing to her apartment, she says that after all of this, if he would like to, that the guest room that he is currently staying in can permanently be his if he wants it. And he said that he would like that very much. And then Bryce gives him her apology meal, which is just meat in a rice bowl. And Hunt's like, thank you. But he also says, like, he's seen other foods that's looked more appetizing, but he's like, I'll still eat it.
Yeah, Bryce cannot cook very well.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's fine. But after they have their little meal, Bryce goes back to her room where a cat is sitting on her dresser. And Bryce is like kind of just like going through the motions. She's exhausted. She's had a day, rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
But as she's kind of just going through the motions, she has this conversation with the cat, which we know is Adis now.
Mm-hmm.
So Adis asks again, what blinds an oracle, Bryce Quinlan? So she says, you know, and then he responds with, the Autumn King's only daughter thrown out like rubbish. He'll kill me if he knows, is what Bryce says. And so he says, then make the drop. And Bryce tried to speak again, but again, she's a very sleepy girl. And she says, mm-hmm. and then what? And he says, I told you, come find me so we can finish this. Dun, dun, dun. Also,
such an underrated character.
Adis?
Mm-hmm.
Heck yeah. Also, just so their little dialogue at the end of the chapter is on page 488. Not only is the, like, the words important, but also I would challenge you to consider the text, like the physical text itself, because that is also very interesting. And if you read other books in the SJM verse, you'll be picking up what I'm putting down.
Is it in italics?
Uh-huh.
Mm. It's in the special italics. Okay. If you... I don't know if that's a spoiler.
I mean...
I don't... If you are in the Sarah J. Maas world, if something is in italics, it is important.
I feel like that's mostly just fantasy because these kids do it too. But yeah. I feel like if you're not far into fantasy, then you don't know. Because I feel like... Because it could be stylistic choices. Because I read some books, and I love when authors do this. Whenever there's, like, a text combo, and it'll be, like... I love whenever they do the actual, like, little bubbles. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they will just change the text style, whether it's, like, normal versus italicized, or just, like... This one I don't like. There was one book I read and it was so hard to distinguish who was who, but they like ever so slightly changed the font,
mm-hmm.
but it was so similar. I had like go back. I'm like, hold on, who's talking? So like, if you're not well versed in fantasy, I could see where like the fancy words
with the fancy lines.
I could see how that could go over people's heads because I feel like the first time I read this, I definitely didn't clock it. But whenever I was reading Throne of Glass, we do see that stylistic choice again. And I was like, wait a minute, hold the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and when you're audiobooking, you don't see any of the text.
Mm-hmm.
So you hear the voices, right, which gives you the right tone that you need, right? But it doesn't show you any of those italics. You don't know when Sarah is like trying to really push something out there for you to see.
Mm-hmm.
So that is interesting. And it does, like, I love audiobooks. I audiobook a lot, but it does give the, like, reading the physical copy, like, its advantages.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. So yeah, that sums up chapter 52. Chapter 53, the weather is crap and so is everyone's vibe. First of all. So Hunt tries to get Bryce to eat, but she didn't want food. He even made her a plate, and he noted that she really hasn't eaten for like 5 days. She's just picked at everything. She doesn't need a male telling her when to eat, but he wants to be a friend who helps her and also reminds her that she gets really angry and mean when she's hungry. So Bryce gets really hangry, and so he's like, please eat food for my health, which fair. We have Danica's clothes laying by the door. They're in a bag and they're ready for the Mimir test to be ran on them. We do learn a little bit more about Hunt during this time. He taught himself to cook, which same. That's not easy to do. It's really hard. It takes a long time. But he taught himself to cook, and it made him pretty popular within the war camps. And we love a man that can cook.
Yeah, we do.
A man that can make a meal. Bet. Absolutely. So they took some more photos in this moment, because as you guys probably have noticed, when good moments are happening, they are now capturing them on Hunt's phone. So they took some more photos of Syrinx, the breakfast, Bryce drinking coffee with a scowl on her face, like all the good stuff. Victoria came by and picked up the clothes and officially has the tech for the testing. So Hunt also handed her a piece of paper to get tested as well. It was a list of potential demons working with the Crystallos, and Victoria got nervous because this list had the worst of the worst of the demons, and they really hoped that it wasn't one of them. So there is a possibility that it could be like some of the worst demons in existence. This test takes a while to run, but Hunt hoped that it wasn't as bad as he was assuming it was going to be, like the results themselves. So they are waiting and waiting. And so they, like Bryce and Hunt, they're watching some reality TV. The next morning comes by and Hunt gets a call from Micah, who says, "My office, 15 minutes, just you." Cue dramatic dun dun dun. Bro is so sketch.
It was so hard listening to this audiobook. Because of who voices Micah, I was so conflicted.
Oh, I get that. Oh, no, because you listen to the, you're doing the, because you do the dramatized version, right?
Yeah, I listened to this baby's first graphic audio. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, Elizabeth Evans did an okay job. Like, it didn't get me. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. She did great.
No, the graphic audio, it's like, I'll just
remind me who the actors, who the audiobook narrator is. Oh, okay.
So yes. He voiced Lucian and Zayden, and Micah's just not fun guy. And I'm like, don't use my baby's voices. Don't keep my wife's name out of your mouth. Okay. I don't want it. Because every time we talked, I just heard Zayden. I'm like, he would never.
He would never. Like, Micah would, but Zayden would never.
He wouldn't.
That's so funny.
Lulu would not even, it's not even in his wheelhouse.
Leave Lucian alone. Justice for Lucian.
Speaking of like the whole rehome Hunt and Rune, put him in a bubble. I do have a sticker that says petition to rehome Lucian.
Yes, Lucian is also up for adoption.
He also needs it. I'm sticking all my sweet baby boys in a bubble and protecting them.
Madison's going to actually open a orphanage for...
No, me and my friend, we literally do this anytime like someone has like a traumatic past, or like put them in the bubble, and if there's like someone that we both like, and we'll be like, so is it okay if we like share custody, like if I get them on the weekends and like holidays and you get them like weekdays?
Yeah, so you can get them off to school.
Yeah, so Hunt, Zayden, Lucian, Rune, come join my
bubble. All of them. I can see that your trope is the who did this to you.
Very much the who did this to you. Yeah, just like I can fix them. It's fine. Mm-hmm.
She's gonna adopt them all.
Oh yeah.
Madison's orphanage for abandoned book boyfriends.
Not abandoned, just like, what's the word I'm looking for? Mistreated.
Abused.
And abused. I will love
Madison's
you.
Group home for underrated book boyfriends.
Not even underrated, okay? Because Dorian's in there because he's been through a lot. And Dorian
okay, is not fair. Underrated. We didn't say Dorian in this. We were like Zayden, like Lucian, like underrated. Like Lucian's very underrated.
Zayden's not underrated. I mean, okay, some,
maybe.
But
some people would say he's overrated. That's a hot take. I'm not saying it's my take. I'm just saying it's a take that people might
have. Your own. I respect it. Game recognizes game.
Okay. All right. Chapter 54. Let's do it.
So Hunt visits Micah because he was summoned, and Micah is essentially like, yo, why are you running tests using Faytech on a new batch of Danica Fendir's clothing? Mm-hmm. And Hunt goes into the whole thing of what they think they found out, who they think that are suspecting, and Micah's like, the summit is in 2 weeks, which again is their time frame for him to figure this out, as well as also figure it out to also keep his new bargain with Micah. And Micah also goes off saying that Sabine called and she was going off for even be like remotely considered as a suspect. And Han was like, I know it's a mistake. Like, we'll make up for it. We're just like really trying to figure this out. And Micah says that Sanjil keeps like mentioning Hunt and is wanting to do a trade with Micah to essentially get Hunt back, because once upon a time she was one of his owners. And Micah threatens Hunt, saying like, I keep on telling her no, but like, don't give me a reason to reconsider and say yes.
Do you think this was a scare tactic, or do you think she really said it?
Both.
Do you think she really said it? Or do you, like...
I think she really said it because I think she knows the effect that she has on Hunt. Mm-hmm. Especially, like, with the whole ordeal with, like, what happened with them exiting the elevators and, like, everyone bowing except for the two of them. And she just, like, clocks it. Yeah. Because they're both not good people. So I can see it being a scare tactic and her being like, I need to punish him too.
Yeah.
But because of Hunt doing all of the things that Micah is not approving of, he sends Hunt on another mission to go kill more people. And Micah specifically says no guns, as not only punishment to the people that Hunt has to go kill now, but also punishment to Hunt itself. Because again, even though Hunt is assigned these assignments, he has to follow it to Micah's specific, like, conditions.
Specifications.
It's fine.
Which is sad.
So Hunt goes to his room in the barracks. He kind of starts to disassociate with himself, get in that zone. He puts on his gear, puts on his helmet. And as soon as that helmet comes on, he's like checked out. But Bryce is texting him, asking like if he's okay. She's ordering dumplings for lunch. Does he want any? And he turns his phone over to stop seeing the text messages as he's like still getting ready. And then eventually he just says, I'm good, I'll see you later. And Bryce says, okay. But then we learn from Bryce's POV for a little bit that she was actually like really struggling with what to say, because she's like, I want to be worried, but like, I don't want him to know that I'm worried because I don't have the right to be worried, but like also kind of worried. But she knows that Hunt essentially, before he went off to do whatever he's doing, because she doesn't know, that Naomi is on the roof in Hunt's place. So eventually Bryce confronts Naomi, asking if, what does she say specifically? Asking Naomi, do you have any idea where he might have gone? And then she says, Naomi, Hunt is, and then she looks at Bryce, a look of surprise on her face, and then she says, Hunt is fine. We're going to be revisiting that quote because I think my brain is just like, I think my brain is thinking too hard, but like whenever I read this, I was like, wait a minute. So yeah, I'm probably like overthinking, which is my speciality. But we're going to revisit that line because I'm like,
okay, good. Cause I have no idea where you're going with this.
Cool.
I'm excited. Cause I was like, I heard that line and moved on with my life. So I want to know what you're thinking.
Yeah. I overthought a lot during
pack it up and send it to the House of Theories and Lore.
And we'll see you there. But eventually, even after Bryce's – well, sorry, that's my shoe. It squeaked. So eventually, after Bryce's shift, she goes back to her apartment. Hunt's still not back. And she's starting to get even more concerned and worried. So – it just made my little heart happy. She calls Arun, and she's essentially asking him for help and asking if he's seen Hunt anywhere. And he's like, no, what do you mean? Are you okay? And – before she can say like too much, Hunt does walk back in through the door, and she's like, just kidding, I found him, talk to you later. So she hangs up. She's trying to ask Hunt all these questions, but he is still checked out, and he walks himself straight to the bathroom to essentially wash all the blood that's covering him. And we get the iconic shower scene. And this, I feel like shower scenes in this sense and like bath mm-hmm. scenes, I love this micro trope so freaking much. It makes me so happy.
It's a good one.
I love it. But Hunt essentially goes to his bathroom, takes off all the clothes, sets the shower to a scalding hot. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't feel it because, again, he is disassociated and he's just kind of letting the water wash over him. Bryce is like still trying to kind of like reach out a hand, if you will. If you know, you know. And she's like trying to help him. And she goes to turn the water because she kind of like notices that his back is like super duper red. And as soon as she sticks her hand in the water, she realizes how hot it is. And then she gets a better look at her back and sees that essentially because of the temperature, he's essentially burning and creating blisters. But because he made the drop, he's like healing himself like that. Mm-hmm. But he does this because she realizes that he's essentially punishing himself for the things he has to do. But she turns the water down. And she asks if it's okay if she helps wash all the blood off. And he just like kind of very subtly, but like very noticeably, like gives a little nod of her head, of his mm-hmm. head. So she helps wash Hunt. And she uses lavender soap, bro. Alexa.
Sarah, why?
Play I Miss You. I'm sorry. If you know, medicine's crumbling, you know. Guys. Listen, I can never look at lavender soap the same way again. No. I even have like a lavender vanilla hand sanitizer spray in my car. And anytime I like pick it up and read it, I'm just like, oh, my Shayla. Raise your hand if you've also been personally victimized by lavender soap. Because I sure have.
Yes, but in a different way. You're going to hate me.
Why?
Because I, oh my God, I don't want to tell you.
No, do it now.
I'm nervous. Okay, this is like, we're going to lose. No one's going to listen to our show anymore. I hate lavender.
Oh, that's fine.
I hate it. I hate it so much.
I thought you were going to say, I actually hated or I didn't care for and say a character. I was be like,
oh, no. Okay, not that bad then. I thought maybe it was a hotter take than it was. No, so I cannot stand the smell of lavender. And where I'm from, like where I grew up, they had a lavender festival where they like grew lavender and then cut it. And so I would have to stay inside for like 3 days. Because wind, like I would live like on the top of this like hill essentially, and the wind would just blow all the lavender. I'd walk outside and be like, why does it smell like this? So I
mean, you can't relate. Have personal beef with lavender, so that's fine. But
I just pretend it's a different set. Like I know when we use lavender in the books, like it's like I get it and yeah. I love the concept and I love it. I just pretend it's like another scent that I can relate to.
And that's fine. That's fine.
Oh, it's peach soap or like coconut or literally any other scent except it was orange with citrus. Anything except for lavender. I know. I can't stand it. I'm so sorry, guys.
But anywho, once she's done with the lavender soap, I almost wore my – I do have a t-shirt that says Sam Cortland deserved the lavender soap. I almost wore it this one, specifically for this episode. But I'm like, no, because they're not going to see it. It's just going to be a purple shirt that says Sam. am I wrong?
No, that's funny, though. And that's a Throne of Glass reference, so she can't go any more into it, just in case you have not jumped into Throne of Glass series.
But just know that he deserves lavender soap, okay?
He deserves lavender soap. He does. He does. Yes, agreed. Lavender for everybody.
You get lavender. You get lavender. Anywho, after the emotional bomb that was lavender soap, Bryce dries Hunt off, walks him to his room. He's, again, just like physically there, mentally checked out. Mm-hmm. She helps him get dressed and helps him get into bed. And as she's leaving, he grabs her wrist and like, it's kind of like silently saying, like, would you do mind staying? And so she's like, yeah, sure. So her clothes, she got in the shower fully clothed. So she takes all those clothes off, throws on a t-shirt, which I did find this part kind of funny because, as we know, boys with wings, how do you get dressed? How do you do it?
Yeah, I try to think too hard about it. I just put it in the, okay, it's fantasy box. Yeah. So therefore it is.
Because Bryce like holds up that shirt and she's like, underwear it is. You're fine. You don't need a shirt.
Yeah. So you got 16 abs. You're fine.
Yeah. So she puts on the shirt because she's like, I don't got wings. It's a shirt. But she puts on the shirt. She climbs into bed. And as she's like sitting against the headboard, he puts his head in her lap. Just like, it's so cute.
That is so cute.
And she starts to kind of just like run her fingers through his hair, just like it's a soothing gesture and just to remind him that he is a good person no matter what mm-hmm. they made him do. And it's so cute. And they fall asleep like that. However, like it's not a it's like almost there's only one bed trope, but like not exactly because like we know they have their own rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But like regardless, if you are in bed or if there's only one bed, you don't be the person that's like, oh, I'll sleep on the couch or I'll sleep on the floor. No, you share the one bed.
You just stay right there.
Hunt breaks this rule. He's like,
he does.
I woke up. I'm a little embarrassed. But he picks up Bryce, takes her to her room. I was like, no, you did it wrong.
I'd have been so mad if I woke up and I was like in my own bed.
I mean, but I kind of get it because I mean, like, if I was her, I would have been embarrassed too because she saw all of him as he was just like mentally checked out because he was not there, very vulnerable.
What is putting her back on her own bed gonna do? She still saw it. It's still there.
I mean, but yeah, but it still gives him like a little bit of space to just like.
But from Bryce's perspective, though, or I guess think of like if you were her and you like did all those things and then you fell asleep there, if you woke up and you were in your own bed at first, would you be like, WTF? Or would you be like, oh, yeah, I get it immediately?
I don't get it. Listen,
I would not get it. I would not get it. Maybe after a few minutes of thinking about it, but
leave my baby alone.
He can do no wrong.
But after Hunt puts Bryce back in her own bed, he's walking back to his room where he does see like the string of messages between Bryce and Rune, but also like a bunch of unanswered messages from Rune. And this also made my heart very happy because Rune says, is Athalar all right? Are you all right? And then later he says, I called the front desk of your building and the doorman reassured me that you're both up there. So I'm assuming you two are fine, but call me in the morning. And then I love them so much. He says, I'm glad you called me tonight. I know things are messed up between us and I know a lot of that is my fault, but if you ever need me, I'm here anytime at all, Bryce. He's just trying to be a good big brother and make up for his mistakes. Good job, Rune. Listen, if it wasn't for the Autumn King, I feel like Bryce and Rune, like, I wasn't going to say majority of their problems, all their mm-hmm. problems would just, like, be non-existent.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you're.
We mm-hmm. end chapter 54 with that sweet moment. That sweet brother sister moment. Or as Hunt refers to them, cousins, because he doesn't know.
That's true. Yes. Yes, he does not.
Okay. So, chapter 55. Bryce wakes up in her own bed, and she realized that Hunt must have moved her while she was sleeping in the middle of the night. And she's kind of like, she kind of feels bad because she's like, maybe he shouldn't have done that with, like, the amount of injuries and, like, how he showed up. She was like, she kind of felt a little guilty for it. But she eventually wakes up. Gets out of bed, checks on Hunt. He's still passed out in his room. So she goes to the kitchen to make some breakfast. But as she's like getting the coffee made, she looks at her phone and sees all the messages from Rune. And it's very, very sweet.
Mm-hmm. That is sweet.
Let me find what she said real quick. So kind of just like whenever she was like wanting to tell Hunt that she was worried, but like also not saying that she was worried, she didn't really know like what exactly to say to Rune, but she settles with thank you, I'll call you later, because she realizes like in that moment whenever they were talking last night that Rune was like 100% willing to like abandon his friends and abandon like everything he was doing to go help his sister. And it was so nice of him.
It was nice of him. Good job, Rune.
Good job. Good job, big brother.
Making amends.
But once Hunt does wake up, they have like a little moment. And their moment, we're going to like revisit in the House of Theories and Lore, because again, I have thoughts and words, but they're having a moment. Things are getting like kind of hot and heated. But Hunt does kiss Bryce on the cheek as a thank you for taking care of him last night, because he just couldn't do it. And that was so, so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to save the things for House and Theory Lore, because I have words. So Bryce ends up leaving for work after breakfast because she is a working lady. And when she gets there, Lily says, "Oh, it's horrible, BB." And Bryce is like, "I just got here. Like, what the heck?" And whenever she gets there, she finds that Jezebel has apparently delivered to the gallery. And it is this massive 8-long creature, no lips, just sharp teeth. And it's just sitting in this tank. And it's kind of like eyeing Lily. Lily's eyeing the Nock, because the Nock knows that, like, it has some semblance of intelligence to it. It's not just like, it's not a fish. Like, mm-hmm. It has some intelligence to it. So, like, it looks at Lily because it knows that water, obviously, is very fatal to fire sprites. But also, Lily knows that air is lethal to the Nox. So, mm-hmm. They're just, like, kind of having this thing. Bryce is staring at it. She also noticed that the creature also has the inked SPQM tattoo on its wrist. So we get a little bit of lore from Lily as they're kind of like trying to decide what the heck do we do with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Hunt is like, "What are you going to feed this thing?" And Lily says, "It loves humans. They drag swimmers under the surface of ponds and lakes and drown them, then slowly feast on their corpse over days and days." And then Bryce is like, "Beef. We're doing beef. I don't need to know this. It's fine. Just stop talking." And then Lily asks if we can put up a curtain. And Bryce just says that Jezebel's just going to rip it down, because whatever Jezebel wants, she gets. But Hunt does offer. He's like, "I can pile some books on this table to block your view of him." Which is so nice.
Built her a house.
But Lily's like, but he's still gonna know. Once they're done like talking about the Nock, Hunt notices that Bryce is kind of like fidgeting with her leg, and he's like, "You should probably really go see a medwitch about that." And of course, Bryce says that her leg is fine because she don't need no man telling her what to do. Girl power.
No man.
But Bryce is like, "My leg is fine." Continues on working. Hunt does get a call from Victoria telling them to meet her and that she has something for them. So whenever they do meet Victoria, she does have results back from the Mimir test, which is the scent test again. And they did, in fact, find small bits of something synthetic. So Victoria calls them for a meeting. So Bryce and Hunt go meet Victoria after Bryce's shift, and Victoria does reveal that after getting the results back from the Mimir screening, that they actually did find traces of synth. And as we know from way in the beginning of the book, synth is kind of like a drug that's going around on the streets, but is something mm-hmm. that you do not want to mess with, because that like is on another level and mm-hmm. will completely just like mess you up. So Victoria calls Hunt for him and Bryce to come meet her. They do. And she reveals that she got the test back from the Mimir test and that they found traces of synth. And Bryce is like, what the heck is that? Because we like kind of get a little bit of information as she's like buying her party drugs in the very beginning of the book. But Victoria tells Bryce it is some sort of drug. From what I can find, it looks like it's mostly used for medical purposes in very small dosages, but might have leaked onto the streets, which led to dosages that are far from safe. And Bryce, because again, she gave Victoria some more of Danica's clothing. So this is where they're getting all the samples from. Bryce is like, Danica wouldn't have anything to do with that. And right. Victoria's like, of course not. But she was exposed to it. All of her clothes were, whether that was upon her death or before it, however, it's unclear. We're about to run a test on the samples we took from the pack of devils and the two most recent victims. And then Hunt brings up that, again, kind of like trying to tie this all perfectly in a little bow, that Tertian was in the meat market and he might have taken it. Because as again, it is a street drug.
And a reminder of who, can you remind our listeners who Tertian is? Because it's been a hot minute.
Yes, Tertian was the son of a vampire who was meeting with Bryce to like kind of have like a little deal to get some art from Bryce from Griffin Antiques. But he's very shady, was getting very handsy with Bryce. We don't like Tertian. But he eventually died shortly after he spoke
to Bryce. Yeah, like right after.
Via Cristalos.
Yes. Right outside the meat market.
So as we're talking about the synth, Bryce recalls that Rune said that Medwitch mentioned something about a synthetic healing compound that could possibly repair, and she didn't finish the sentence because she's like kind of like me whenever I have a thought and process and I'm like, hold on, and just like run with it. She's like, we need to act on this. So she like kind of puts a pin in that thought, saves it for later. But they thank Victoria for meeting with them. But then they go on their way. So after their meeting with Victoria, they go back to the gallery because they have to go pick up Syrinx. And as they're kind of sitting with this thought of the synth, Bryce pulls out her phone and calls Rune. And she's asking if he has heard anything about this synthetic healing drug that he heard, specifically the Medwitch reference. And he said that there's kind of things that he's been reading on, but everything is highly redacted. But he does mention that the synth can do pretty amazing things. There's a list of ingredients here again, and a lot of it was redacted. But he mentions that obsidian salt is listed as one of the ingredients, which Bryce then asks, could the synth be used to summon a demon? If someone didn't have the power on their own, could the obsidian salt and the drug let them call on something like the Cristallos? And Rune's like, I'm not sure, but I can let you know after I read some more. But again, everything's redacted, so good luck, Rune. But as they're kind of going on that little journey, they just have a cute another like little brother-sister moment. And I love them. I love that they're bonding.
Me too.
So after they're done talking with Rune, Hunt really wants to figure out who is selling this stuff. And he wants to figure it out. Bryce wants to figure it out. And Hunt's like, okay, like, we'll go tomorrow. Take off tonight. And Bryce is like, I would. However, I am scheduled to talk with my parents. And we all know how meticulous Bryce has to be like, I love you, Mom, but, like, here's an excuse that, like, doesn't tell you what I'm doing because, like, I love you, but, like, you can't know these things for your safety. But, like, for her to back off in such short notice, Ember would definitely clock and be like, what's wrong?
She knows. She's a smart lady.
She knows. And I know she knows. Sorry. So, Hunt, because they're talking about parents now, he asks, or he says, enjoy talking to your parents, Bryce. They're alive. Don't miss out on a moment of it. Not this. I wish I had that luxury. And then it goes into the conversation of her asking about Hunt's parents. And Hunt mentions that he doesn't know who his dad is and that his mom was a low-ranking angel. And essentially, Hunt sent her money, but his mom refused to use it. And once people heard about this, people actually went and killed Hunt's mom because of the money, and they stole from her. And unfortunately, because of Hunt's mom's status in the hierarchy, no one investigated her case to figure out who killed her. And also with everything going on with Hunt, with the rebellion and all that jazz, Hunt also just wasn't allowed to mourn her because she was of such low ranking. They're like, why? Which, very, very sad. So that's why he decided to join a cause like Shahar's, because he is very, very against the angel hierarchy and believes that everyone should be of equal, like, acknowledgement.
Yeah, and it wasn't even that much money. Like, she didn't even have really anything in there.
Hunt says, I battled on Mount Hermon that day for her, my mother, and her memory. And then this I also found interesting. He doesn't say this, but he thinks it. He says Shahar had taken those memories and made them into weapons. But Bryce says it sounds like she, meaning his mom, was a remarkable person. And he says she was. And then Bryce says, all right, I'll video chat with my parents, and then playing Legionary with you can wait. And then once I get home, homegirl gets busy cleaning because you're not going to have a messy house with Ember Quinlan on the line because she will clock it. But essentially, once they get settled, the place is clean, hopefully to Ember's standards. So as they sit down on the couch, they're getting ready to dial or to video call Ember and Randall. And Bryce says, I can open a bottle of wine if you need some liquid courage. And then Ember hops on the screen and she says, and why would he need liquid courage, Bryce Adelaide Quinlan?
Bap.
Pulling out that middle name card.
You know there it is. In
trouble. And that's where we end chapter 55.
Chapter 55. So now we go into chapter 56. Where it's time to meet the parents.
Yeah.
Bryce's parents specifically.
Big move.
So this is a good one. So Ember Quinlan is on the video chat. And she is just as feisty as her daughter. Bryce is a daddy's girl for sure. Randall Salago, who is, as we know, not her like biological father. We know that the Autumn King. Hunt is not, but we know that the Autumn King is her biological dad. But Randall Salago, the man who has been with Bryce since she was young, like way young, he has also been to war and is one of the best sharpshooters and is a girl dad through and through. Bryce is wrapped around his finger entirely. They don't really understand who Hunt is to Bryce, like when they log on, like in this moment, the things that they've heard about him. But Randall noticed all of Hunt's tattoos and markings, and there was a sign of recognition there, but not judgment, which I thought was good. However, he is upset with Bryce for not telling him that the literal Umber Mortis was in her house, right? Like, man's been to war. And he was like, I'm sorry, when were you going to tell me that Athy was actually a shadow of death, like, which... I can see why a dad would be mad about that. So these two men can literally exchange war stories from the same time. And they were like where they were both there. And it reminds me like Randall is old man, essentially, right? Older. And it just reminds like they both just sound like old men to me all the time.
Especially during this. Old men.
I'm not saying they can't be old men. I'm just saying, like, it just makes me laugh. So we also learn more history about Pollux. And this name came up in previous chapters, but is now going to start coming back a little bit. Pollux is one of Sandriel's Triari. So he and Hunt have history. So Hunt was a prisoner to Sandriel, as we know, and he made Pollux upset when he ended the lives of the people Pollux was torturing. So they, like, got in a big old fight, and Hunt got punished for that by Sandriel, even though Sandriel thought it was funny. So it's brought up for just a split second, and then it's, like, put to bed again. But his name, you guys do need to remember. So Bryce and Ember are such an interesting dynamic to me. As a girl, I feel for Bryce because it's she like Ember is like pushing and pushing and pushing, like basically like, have you eaten? Like, have you done any of this? Like, what's happening? Is your house clean? Like all these things, right? Like as a mom, but and she's like, Mom, stop, right? But then as a mother, I sometimes legit sound just like Ember Quinlan. Where I'm like, did you put your socks on? Is your water filled? Like, are you eating breakfast today? Like, did you pack your lunch? Like, you know what I mean? All of these, is your room clean? So I sound just like Ember Quinlan. And sometimes you have to be like, as a mom, you have to check yourself and be like, okay, is this really a big deal? Right? But also, I ask, why the fuck is it so easy to be a dad sometimes? And I'm not saying all the time, right? Like, I know being a dad definitely has its challenges. Like, being a dad is not the easiest thing on the planet. I'm sure that, like, dads have a lot of stress that, like, we don't know about, which I get. But, like, sometimes being a mom is so hard, especially with a daughter. Like, Ember, again, has to be, like, is your house clean? Are you hydrating? Are you healing? And Randall just is like, all right, ladies, like, let's keep the peace, like, like, I'm just dad hanging out. And she's like, okay, dad. Oh my God. And then Ember's like, has to go through this checklist of things. And she's like, Mom, like, stop. Right. Like it's, but if they both were just chill, would anything get done in Bryce's life? Is the question. Would it be different if Randall was like, did you clean your house today, Bryce? Are you hydrating? Right? Like, would it be different, a different dynamic between the two ladies if Randall would take some of that mental load from
Ember? Have their own roles. Like, I feel like that's very much Ember's role. But again, whenever Bryce was saying, or she was like giving a little bit of a rundown to Hunt about Randall, she was like saying how she literally had to fight him in order to prove that she can like handle herself in the city. So I think like Ember is very much like, are you just like doing the basic necessities, where Randall's more like ex-soldier? Are you safe?
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I went off on a tangent. I needed that to be out in the air. So
as a single dog mom, I cannot relate.
She can't relate.
So I don't know.
Is your dog drinking water?
No, he's awful at the dog drinking water.
Gotta remind him. So the parents start to question this case that they are working and the safety of Bryce, but she does reassure them. Hunt also reassures that she is safe and an asset to the 33rd. Hunt is then bold as fuck because he's like, oh, Ember, have you asked Bryce about her leg to get help? And Mama Quinlan knew nothing about her, like her leg still hurting her. And he is honest and tells them everything. Bro. So basically all three of them gang up on her. And Hunt is like, you're literally messing with it right now under the table. And he's like calling her out. And he's like, I think it saw venom in it from the attack. And he calls himself an alpha hole.
Shut up.
And tells her, like, you need to take care of yourself. Which, and Ember's like, I'm making you an appointment right now.
That's very much something my mom would do. That's very mom coded.
It's an awful feeling to be literally ganged up on by three people like you care about something that you have the right to or not to take care of. She is not a teenager. Bryce is a literal adult with a job and an apartment and trauma of her own. Mm-hmm. And if she wants to have a hurt leg, that's her problem. Why are we continuously going against her boundaries? It's possible Ember's, to care too Ember's much.
Just what we call a helicopter mom.
No, I'm mad at Hunt.
Oh.
I mean, I'm mad at Ember too, right? Because, like, girl, chill. But, like, he did that on purpose. That was not like, oh, oops, I didn't mean to say anything. Like, he was like, he knew the vibe. He caught the vibe between mom and daughter and was like, ah, this is my opening. I want her to get help. I want her to be better. But just because you want her to be better doesn't mean she wants to be better.
That he, because, so the case happened 2 years ago. And mm-hmm. Bryson Hunt, no contact whatsoever, because why? Until Micah assigns, like, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So, like, between that time frame, I could see where he's, like, well, I assume, like, there's – it was a big thing that was on the news. We know it was on the news because, again, like, from what the pack picking on Bryce and everything. So, like, her mom has to know that she was involved in this big case. So from Hunt's perspective, I would assume that Bryce told her, like, enough to know. But also, like, I – like, why would you leave out – an injury, because I could see Bryce in the past being like, oh yeah, and I got like this massive cut on my leg, but you know what, it's fine, like I went to the doctor, but like in a lying sense, instead of like Ember being like what cut are you talking about? Because I mean, you can see on the news and everything that had happened, like ain't no way a homegirl went unscathed, but she let Ember believe that. So I don't know, if I was in
well Ember
shoes,
was with I her after the attack.
Yeah, so if I was in Hunt's shoes, especially she was like after, if she was with Bryce after the attack, then I would assume that Ember would have known about said cut on her thigh.
Yeah, I think she knew about the cut, yes, but she did not know that it was still causing her problems and that Bryce refused to go to the MedWitch to like get care for it. And I think that Hunt did this because of guilt, because he was the one who stapled it together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
feel guilty about that.
Yes. So I think that this card that he played was partially was guilt driven. Like, oh, I did this to her, so I need to fix her. So I need to make it better. I need to make amends.
I can see that.
He went about it the wrong way.
He's
let Bryce
baby.
Heal when he's an old man.
He's only 233 years old. He's not 500 like Resand. He's just a baby.
Can you imagine? But like, think of it this way, though. Here's another point that I have. And I want to preface this that I do love Hunt very much. Like, I know you do. I just have thoughts. What would this have looked like if it was Sandriel? Would he have treated Sandriel this way? Would he have...
You mean Shahar?
Oh my god, yes. Let me reword that. Wow.
I was like, wait a minute.
So I asked this question. Would he have done this to Shahar? Would he have gone around Shahar to someone, you know what I mean? Like in this area.
I feel like with Shahar it would have been slightly different because of status.
Which is fair, right? So I mean the answer is no, I would think. He would never have done that to Shahar. He never would have been like, well, you need to do this or you need to do that or you need to mm-hmm. eat or you need to take care of yourself. Like, because he respected her. He respected Shahar as a archangel, as a leader, as a lover, as someone he cared about. Why is Bryce not getting this same respect? Just because you disagree, Hunt, with her choices does not mean that you have the right to go against them with her. I don't know. I have a lot of feelings on this. I have so many feelings.
That's valid. That's okay.
I hate it. I hate it. I went listening to this chapter. I was like, "You've got to be kidding me! You're joking." And I was like, "No, nope." If I was Bryce, I would have walked out. They like she closes the laptop, but like I would. It's time for a run. I gotta go. No. So
don't join the bubble.
Yeah, I was like, I can't. So Ember is making an appointment. She's like, I'm making an appointment for you tomorrow, which whatever, fine. When Ember, laptop is shut, like she's like, I'm done. So Ember waits for Bryce to get to her room, calls her again and asks if her father is behind this case. And not obviously not Randall, right? But the Autumn King. And she mentions that Micah is a monster. But we know this already. Like this is not new information. She reassures mom that she is okay, but Ember is super stressed about her daughter's safety. And she also really stresses because Bryce is now hanging out with a veneer male. And the history of veneer males is bad, especially for Ember, right? Because we know that Ember was with the Autumn King and there was some abuse there that Ember had to go through and that she got away from. So she really stresses for Bryce, which I think is a huge part of where Bryce got Alpha Hole from and how mm-hmm. she protects herself from going through the same thing that Mom did. So I think that there is a lot of roots in history to that. So Bryce fights Mom on the Medwitch again, and she is reminded that just because Danica died doesn't mean she has to suffer too. And that wraps up that chapter. So that wraps up the chapters that we have for today. So thank you for joining us on the guided tour of Crescent City. If you are sticking around for the House of Theories and Lore, just remember there are spoilers for the Mass verse. So be wary when you enter. If you're not entering and you want to save this episode and come back later, we will see you next week with another set of chapters. Into the house we go.
Okay, so whenever I was reading these chapters, there are certain things that – it's been a hot minute since I read the series, but there are things that I think could be alluding to the mating bond between Hunt and Bryce. Okay. I do the All quotes right. because it's never like solidified, because they always say like that they're kind of like each other's chosen mate.
Well, because they don't really have, if I remember correctly, like Hunt, like angels don't really have like the mates, right?
I don't think so. But like for the Pack of Devils, like that makes sense because wolves, like in Omega versus mates are a thing. Like that makes sense, but then if you go mm-hmm. like to ACOTAR, they have mates in Throne of Glass, there are mates there, but even like people can be considered like having mates even if like only half of the party is magical in a sense.
Yeah, so it says that they do, but not in the deep soul binding mating bonds that like Fae have. For yes. angels. So really like, it's just like a term for life partner.
Yeah, because even like Aleed and Lorcan, like Aleed 100% human, mm-hmm. but Lorcan's not. But they like still have that mate thing going on. Mm-hmm. But some things that I clocked was first off in chapter 52, whenever Bryce makes her apology meal and then gives it to Hunt, I was like, what if this is their mating food? Because like in ACOTAR, it's a thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think maybe
I have more, but keep going.
Symbolically, yes.
Yeah.
Tell me other things. Tell me what else you have.
52, we have allegedly the food. And then in chapter 54, whenever Bryce goes to Naomi to be like, hey, have you seen Hunt? Is he okay? This is the sentence I was talking about. Naomi says, Hunt is, looks at Bryce and a look of surprise on her face. So to me, I'm like very much in the ACOTAR world whenever I was reading this, but I was mm-hmm. like, what if she like picked up on the bond before they did? You know? Because, like, you don't need to eat the food for the bond to occur. But, like, that is, like, a really big thing. Because even Rhysand goes into it and he says, like, this is a big thing. And, like, once you accept the bond, like, be prepared for just, like, feral overload.
But don't they have to know that they – like, they have to know that they're accepting the bond. And then, like, physically, like, mentally accept it.
I think traditionally, yes. But I feel like Bryce and Hunt aren't traditional, so I could very easily see them, like, accidentally falling down this mating rabbit hole, in my opinion. But, yeah. So, we have chapter 52, the food, mm-hmm. chapter 54, potential, like, registering of the mating bond, and then I gotta go... Excuse me, back to my chapter 55 notes. Because whenever they're getting, like, a little hot and bothered, I don't know if it's just because it's been a long time for Hunt or what, but, like, so as they're talking, like, she's getting all hot and bothered, and she's like, crap, like, he can smell this, so she's trying to deflect, but she's, like, describing looking at Hunt, And she says that his eyes were dark. And then she's like, was that a purr in his voice? And she's just like trying to play all this off as she says that his eyes darken further. And she says, Bryce, that she couldn't breathe properly with that stare fixed on her, that stare that told her he scented everything going on in her body. My theory is just like, what if, because as we know, they get together, they have this like not official, but like kind of official-ish mating bond things. I'm like, what if it was already like happened book one?
That would be insane. I'm not saying no to it. I definitely have questions about it. Like,
because like Aelin and Rowan, like their mating thing, if you read, like you can see like
that's see it starting.
That's mate behavior. But then you don't find out later. And they're like, you're mine and I'm yours.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I think that's a good question. I think it's a good observation. And I can see Sarah doing that for sure.
We'll never know.
We'll never know. Maybe book four we'll like really know if that was like there in the beginning.
I can't recall she said that book four, like Bryce and Hunt are done. Kind of like your theories of the She Loves Three. I think their story's done and it's picking up with someone else.
I don't know.
And unfortunately, I think it's going to be Therian.
It probably will be.
Or actually, no.
I would think that.
Because I could actually get on that board a little bit because of his love interest. Again, as someone who loves, I love a good love story. So, like, I can follow that. But, like, Therian himself alone, I don't want that.
Nah, it'll be a love. It has to be. Right? Like, that's just who the that's just what the books are. It's who Sarah is. So I feel like it will have the type of romanticity that you are craving. Yes. I have no doubt. Ooh, that's a good question. All right. Do you guys think that there were early signs of mate bond material in book one? If you have read the whole series, obviously. Let us know.
Do you have any theories?
I do not. That was really good, though.
Thank you.
I it's a lot to like sit on and think about. Overthinking
paid off. Thank you. Thank yes. you.
There we go. For once. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. My name is Dallas.
And I'm Madison.
And this was the Goodish Girls. We'll see you later.
And don't forget to go order candles from Starlight Candle Co.
Yes, Starlight Candle Co. Goodish Girls 15 in the show notes. Get yourself some fall candles.
Yes.
I love it. Can't get enough of the Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.